I couldn't do it better myself. Pretty good. I want to thank Milt, the committee, and everybody else that's responsible for us being here, you know. I want to thank my wife for still being with me. That's the miracle that blows my mind, okay? I don't know why they stay with us, but they do, okay? They must see something we don't see. And I met Billy, okay? And I told Billy I'm going to hear my two-hour talk tonight, okay? And it's just amazing. Like my wife told you this morning, at the end of this month, we'll be married 42 years, okay? Well, she's married 42 years. I'm only married 29, okay? And that's the way it is. And congratulations on your anniversary today. That's beautiful, man. I am an alcoholic. My name is Joe Newport. I'm a member of the Tuesday Night Sharpsburg group in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hi. And like Bob said, it's just great to be sober. I can't put it no other way, okay? Without sobriety, I have nothing. I know that today, okay? And I want to thank Ralph. I heard Ralph last night, and when he was talking about what it was like before I even picked up a drink, okay, the fears and all that irritable, restlessness, discontented. I had that ever since I can remember, okay? And that's just the way it was. And my wife, I never like to hear her side of the story, okay? I really don't, okay? I get mad at her. I want to kill the guy that did that to her, okay? And then I realize it's me. You know, it's me. And a few years back, her and I went to a meeting, and I let her hear me for the first time. You know, you take your wife and let her hear your lead. And we got in the car to go home, and halfway home, she said to me, "That ain't the way it was." And I said to her, "But that's what I remember, okay? I don't know what it was like." But there's two sides to every story, okay? And hers and mine are different, that's all. And I swear to God, I learned by being sober that opposites seem to attract, okay? And I was talking to this other, the lady that introduced Diane today, and how similar Diane is to her and I am to her husband, okay? My wife's a worker. She'll do things like that, okay? And I can sit beside any job and just watch it, you know, just easy does it. We'll get this done later. And that's the way it is. And like I say, growing up, I was full of fear. I couldn't tell you what I was afraid of, but I was just afraid of everything, okay? And looking back on it now, I know why I was afraid. I was always in the wrong place at the wrong time doing the wrong thing. And when you're doing that, you know you're going to get caught someday, a matter of time, okay? You're going to get busted. You're going to be back in the jackpot. You're going to lie your way out of it, okay? And lying is just something I knew how to do. I didn't have to learn how to lie or cheat or steal. That just came automatically, okay? And something about my life, I never want to do what other people want me to do. Don't ask me why that is, okay? If they say go left, I go right, okay? They say put a tie on, I don't put a tie on. It's just the way it is. And when I finally got up to near high school age, where I live in the city of Pittsburgh, they have it broken down into districts. You must go to certain schools. And they chose to send me to this place called Shenley High School. And I didn't choose to go to Shenley High School. I chose to go to this other school called Peabody. And they wouldn't let me go. They sent me to Shenley anyway. So I showed them. I played hook for the first 30 days. You just don't go. They'll be sorry I'm not there, okay? Well, at the end of 30 days, you meet someone else. I come home one day from school that I was supposed to be at. Walked in the door, and there was somebody strange with my mother. And I wondered who it was, and I found out it was the truant officer, okay? And in those days, you did go to school, they'd put you in jail. There was no question about you going to school, so I went back to school. And somehow I was always in trouble in school, and they give you detention to serve. Now, other people served detention. I did not serve detention, okay? So I wouldn't serve detention, so the vice principal worked out a plan where 5 to 3, he would call me to his office, and him and I would spend the next hour together. For months, this went on for a long time. But there's something wrong with me. People like to help me, and I do not want help. I want to be left alone. Just let me do my own thing, and I'll be fine. And the more this vice principal tried to help me, the worse I got. I just got worse and worse and worse. Till finally one day, he just had enough of me, and he threw me out forever and a day. Okay, so you'll never enter this door as long as I'm vice principal and all this garbage. And I got thrown out. Now, when I get into big jackpots, major jackpots, I don't tell people about it. There's no sense telling my mother and dad about this right away. When they find out, they're going to be upset, so let them be upset like tomorrow or something, okay? So the next day, my mother got me up to go to school, and I said, "Oh, I can't go today." And she said, "Are you sick?" And I knew that was no good, because you could be sick and she'd send you to school anyway, okay? If you're real sick, they'll send you back home. That was her theory. So I said, "I had a little problem yesterday, and I got thrown out, and I can't go back till next Monday." She says, you're going back today. I said, oh, no. The vice principal said, next Monday, that's fine with me. And in those days, like Diane says, my mother was my higher power, okay? And that day, we went back to Shenley High School. And when we got up there, don't you know it, the vice principal had the flu or whatever they had in those days. And we got to talk to the main man, which was the principal. Now, he didn't ask me about all these other things I was into. He just asked me what happened yesterday. I said, look, some kid called my mother name, and I don't take anybody calling my mother name. And I punched him out in the middle of English class. We went from English class to the hall, from the hall out to the grass. And we got busted, and we got thrown out, okay? And the principal says, you know, if somebody called my mother name, I might get excited like that, too, and accidentally punch him, okay? And I can still picture my mother's veins just sticking out, okay? I don't care what he calls me. I don't give a damn what he says. Blah, 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 blah. You keep your mouth shut and you graduate, okay? And they left me back in. Now, if you had any brains in your head at all, the one guy you would not want to see for months would be the vice principal, okay? You would sort of duck him, okay? Wrong. I went right to his office the very next morning. Looked in as he was sitting at his desk and hollered in, hey, Mr. Cogan, how you doing today? And I can still picture his hair going up on end, okay? And he says, well, what are you doing here? And I said, the principal left me back in, okay? And him and the principal were fighting, and I'm laughing. I'm like, I got them again. I never got anybody in my life but myself, but I always thought I got them, okay? Craziness. And I grew up in a little town in Bloomfield, and in this town, Bloomfield, we had a big steel bridge that connected Bloomfield to what we called Polish Hill in those days, okay? And underneath this bridge was a baseball field, a swimming pool, basketball courts, and all that other stuff. And us hoodlums hung out underneath the bridge, okay? All the winos hung out underneath the bridge. All the gamblers hung out underneath the bridge. And I thought I died and went to heaven, okay? And I picked up my first drunk. Not my first drink. That was back in the cradle, okay? I believe that, okay? I picked up my first drunk. And my first drunk was on Triangle Muscatel wine. And the reason I drank a Triangle Muscatel wine, I used to tell people, was Fritzy Zivic, the great prize fighter, sold Triangle Muscatel wine. Now, that is true. He did sell it, okay? But that ain't why we drank it. When you got the local wino to get you a bottle of wine, he bought you what he was drinking. In those days, for 80-some cents, you got a bottle of Triangle Muscatel wine. And when I pitch 30 cents into something, it sort of becomes my bottle. I don't know about you, okay? I have a very nice word I use on myself. I call myself frugal, okay? But if you talk to my wife, she calls it like it is. You're just cheap. She says, you're not cheap, and that's the bottom line. So we got this bottle of wine. I drank most of it, and I picked up two things that night, a fear of wine and my first blackout, okay? And they took me home, and my dear mother, she was to do most of her life, if you ever do that again, I'll tell him. Now, him was my father, okay? And I already knew my mother wouldn't tell my father because somehow my father would have turned that around that it was my mother's fault that I was underneath the bridge drinking wine. That's just the way Newports do it, okay? Because later on, I acquired a wife, and I acquired kids. And on a Sunday afternoon, I'd be in the VFW drinking, and the phone would ring, and it would be an emergency, and I'd get my wife on the phone, and she'd be hysterical, screaming, the kid's head split open, blah, 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 hit the bumper of the car, blah, blah, blah. I did not ask how the kid was. I did not ask how my wife was. I would say, what kind of mother are you that you cannot watch a two-year-old kid that you would let him fall and hit his head on the bumper, and I got to leave the vets to come up to the hospital to get this straightened out, okay? Sad but true. So I guess my early years were my wine years. That's when we drank all the Triangle Muscatel wine. And somehow I got out of high school. Don't ask me how I did, but I finally graduated. And to this day, I don't understand these things. I always get jobs in management training. Okay? Now, my life is always a mess, and I always run other people's lives. I'm good at running other people's lives, literally. In a management training, you're supposed to go through a chain of command, okay? Well, I go like one to the top. There ain't no middle of the line for me, okay? Before long, I'm the only one running this place. I'm the only one doing this, and blah, 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 blah. And the only thing I ever run in my life is my mouth, okay? I'm not a good worker, but I think I am. And one day, I was down underneath the bridge, whatever I was doing under there, and I come up from underneath the bridge, and here was this girl who went to high school with me across the street in front of this store with a bottle of pop and a bag of potato chips. And she made a mistake. She said, would you like some potato chips, okay? And I crossed the street and took a potato chip off her, okay? And that was 42 years ago. And she's still here, okay? She don't always eat a lot of potato chips, but that's all right. And I believe this. I mean, I don't think this is true or false, but I think she chased me. I was not capable of doing that, okay? I didn't want to get married. I didn't want responsibility. I had it made at home. I never had to pay bored. I never did anything, okay? And we start dating. And I tell you what, it was bizarre. When you date, whether I was full-blown at the time or not full-blown, okay, in the morning we'd be going together at night. I didn't want her. She didn't want me. We'd break up, would not break up. 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd be in front of her house. I'm going to kill myself. You don't take me back. Then she'd take me back. Nothing, didn't want her back. Oh, it got so crazy, you know. And I think the only thing that saved this whirlwind courtship was I worked 8 to 4:30, and she worked 2 to 10 at night. We only spent an hour together. We spent 10, you know. And the sad part of that is, all she kept saying, when are we going to get married? When are we going to get married? Well, you know, drunks don't make decisions. I don't want to get married, okay? And I tell this one story, and this story is for me, not for anyone else, okay? It was on a Friday night, and she was upstairs getting dressed. I was taking her out wherever I was taking her out to. And I was sitting in the kitchen talking to her and her mother. And her mother and me were talking. She was upstairs getting dressed. And we're talking and talking. All of a sudden, four of my buddies pulled up in the car, and they hollered in the door. Hey, man, Noop, we're going to Blairsville. And I said, what are you going to go to Blairsville for? And they told me they were going to Blairsville to fight this monkey, okay? So I said to my future mother-in-law, tell Diane I'll explain this all to her tomorrow, but I got to leave tonight because I got to take the troops to Blairsville. I don't want them to get out there by themselves, okay? And on the way to Blairsville, we stopped and got half smoked up. And the next thing I know, we're in some little sideshow carnival, and the guy is boxing a chimpanzee. The chimpanzee, about 2 foot, they're boxing, 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 boxing. The monkey pointed to his head, grabbed the guy's feet, flipped him, and beat the living heck out of this guy, okay? I thought, man, this is wild, okay? Well, 10, 15 minutes later, they announced two judo experts from Pittsburgh are going to wrestle this other chimpanzee, okay? So I'm looking around for these judo experts, but I didn't see any. Next thing I know, here's two of my wacky buddies going in the wagon. One U-turns, he comes back down. He says, I'm not old enough. He said, but you got to fight draft cards. You can get in there and fight that monkey. Now, there's a problem. Sober, I'm a confirmed coward, okay? My theory is run away to fight another day, okay? We ain't going to do that today. But I can't tell you I'm a confirmed coward and can't fight that monkey. I got to go in there and fight that monkey and show you I'm not a coward. That's crazy, but that's the way it was. So I get in this wagon, they give you an old beat-up football helmet, an old beat-up white shirt, a beat-up pair of pants. Two of us in the wagon, the monkey sitting on a tire in the corner with a muzzle on. They bring this thing out, he shakes your hand, he jumps back on the tire. The guy said, if you pull him off the tire, I'll give you $10. Hold him down for 3 seconds, you get another $10. Now to me, that's $20. I mean, I was good at math. I guess the booze started kicking in because all of a sudden my thinking changed. Now this monkey's dead. I'm going to tear him off that tire, slam him down, this fight's all over. That sounds good, okay? That sounds real good. Well, right before the fight started, the guy said, for God's sake, whatever you do, don't pull the muzzle off. He bites. Now, that puts a little fear in you, okay? But the fight started. For the next 10 or 12 minutes, the monkey beat the living heck out of both of us. That's the only thing I could tell you about this whole story. And the whole thing I remember about the fight is, this monkey's got my head in his football helmet, and he is smacking it off this wagon like you wouldn't believe. The guy that owned him screaming, let him go, Joe, let him go, Joe, let him go, Joe. And I'm telling him, I ain't got him, I ain't got him, I ain't got him. Okay? And that was it. Now, you know, that night, that probably was fun, okay? That ain't no big deal. So a monkey beats the living heck out of you. Got a few rope burns, half your ears gone, your eyes gone. But, you know, 15 years later, when that's the only thing you got to be proud of, that's kind of sad, you know? I loafed in bars where we had World War I veterans, World War II veterans, Korean veterans, and I had never gone to the service. I ended up getting married and being 3F, okay? And they'd be in there telling all these war stories, and I'd start getting mad and angry, wanting to choke them to death and tell them something you did, you know? Well, one guy would be fighting Pork Chop Hill in Korea, another's the Battle of the Bulge, okay? Another guy's going up Iwo Jima. And right in the middle of the big war story, I'd throw out the monkey story, okay? There you go. And my wife don't often tell people this, but for a while there, she was proud of that. You know, she told him, my boyfriend fought a monkey. Now, you got to say. And my wife just didn't quit. You know, when are we going to get married? When are we going to get married? And drunk's fine. You just tire out, okay? You can't make no decision. You just, all right, just get married. Just shut up. Let's just do it, okay? And we did it. And I should say shortly after that, but 2 years after that, our first son was born. And like my wife said, we have 3 sons, okay? And I made a mistake one night from podium. I said, I have three sons named J.J. Newport. And some woman after the meeting said, how'd you tell them apart? I said, they're not, one's Joseph, one's John, one's Jerry. She says, oh, I thought they were all J.J.'s. I said, they are. Never mind. So, and very shortly after our first son was born, I was still at this company I started at after high school. And in my head, I was very, very important now, okay? I am the man at that place. And I went in one day with some ridiculous list of demands. I want this, and I want that, and I need this, and I'm going to quit. You're always threatening people, you know? And the personnel guy shared the office with me, and he says, you know, we got people laid off now. We got this, we got that, blah, 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 blah. I said, okay, I'll wait a week or so, you know what I mean? Then the next day, he had the nerve to tell me he got the secretary a $5 a week raise, okay? I said, you can get her a raise. You can't give me what I want. I'm out of this place. I quit. I don't need this, okay? He said, wait a minute. Let me talk to my brother-in-law. So he talked to his brother-in-law. The brother-in-law said to me, why didn't you come to me in the first place? And I said, well, you told me I have to be like these other goofs and go through this chain of command. So I went through the chain of command. So he says to me, real nice, what do you want? And I laid this all out again a second time, okay? He looked up real nice. He says, you got it, okay? I told him, no, I don't. I don't want it anymore, okay? I wanted that yesterday, okay? If you didn't give me what I wanted when I wanted it, I didn't want it anymore, okay? Looking back on that, for the next 2 weeks, he tried to talk me out of it. But you know, once something's in concrete, I ain't changing my mind about that. I ain't going to tell anybody. And I know for a fact, I just say I don't know and I'll ask my wife. I know for a fact I didn't tell my wife I quit that job. Why would you tell her something inconsequential like that, okay? By the time she finds out I ain't working, I'll have a new job making twice the money, and she'll be rolling in cash, okay? But what I found out was semi-retirement. I was 22, and for the next 3 years, I just didn't work. That's the only way you can put that, okay? I was getting $40 a week unemployment, free food at the vets, and I found a captain to buy my booze. I found my father, okay? And I loved him, my father, not because he was my father, not all that other good stuff. I loved him because he had money. He always had $1,500 in his wallet. And somehow in my sick head, I considered that my money. Because I had one brother who was 10 years older than me. He was named after my father, and they couldn't stand each other, okay? If they were in the same room for 2 minutes, they were fighting, okay? So I figured when he dies anyway, all that money's going to be mine anyway, so I might as well spend it now, okay? And I did a good job at that. I was spending that pretty good. But you know, after 2 or 3 years, people start getting tired. He's getting tired. My mother's getting tired. My mother-in-law's getting tired. My wife's getting tired, okay? My wife used to go out and get a job to support the kids, and I would go out there and embarrass her so she wouldn't work. I said, no woman supports me, okay? I'm taking care of things. Now I ain't working, but I'm taking care of things, okay? And all drunks I know seem to have brother-in-laws. And when you have brother-in-laws, they always seem to be the right kind of guys, okay? They're going to work every day. They're taking care of their families. They're doing all this good stuff, okay? And this guy, Eddie, my wife told me, Eddie had been a drunk. He beat his wife. He did all these terrible things. He got TB. They shipped him to some TB hospital. He came back, and for the next 25 years, he did not drink, okay? Now, if he went to AA, I don't know that. I don't know if he ever did, okay? But Eddie lived this program in his life, okay? He become a father, he become an employee, he become all of those other things that you hope to be someday. And he said to me, why don't you become a city fireman, okay? And I did not want to be a city fireman. And I'll tell you why I didn't want to be a city fireman. I could picture me falling to my death off a ladder, and I'd never been on a ladder. That's just the way it was. So I deliberately flunked the test to be the city fireman. And he was the kind of guy he was in those days. They were in with the politicians with the city. He says, you are going to be the next city fireman whenever they put people on. And I told him, leave me alone, I don't want that. And his other brother-in-law was a mill hunky. I called him the mill hunky, okay? He worked in this Eppenstall steel company, and they were hiring. He said, get out and put an app in, we'll get you hired. I didn't want to be hired. I was happy living the way I was living, okay? But I went down and got this job interview, and I used to tell the story, the reason I got the job, I told the guy I could run lathes, and I could run drill presses, and I could run them. The truth of the matter is, I got the job because my brother-in-law was the vice president of the union. He loafed with the personnel director, and they said, get a body down there, get him to sign the papers, he's hired. And that was a mistake on their part, not on my part, okay? They hired me, and I guess for 60 days I kept my nose clean. I don't know how I did that, but I did. In the end of 60 days, I became a member of United Steelworkers of America Local 1601, okay? And back in those days, you could almost shoot somebody on the premises and not get fired, okay? They may give you 3 days off or tell you, you know, if you do that again, we're going to get you or something, okay? And very shortly after I was there, I developed ulcers. And for the next 5 years, I worked there 5 years, but if they totaled up the time cards, we got 1 year out of it, okay? I was always off sick. I found a family doctor. I would be in the doctor's office. The doctor would be crying, okay? He would cry. He'd say, if I keep signing these papers and never get another doctor to check you, I could lose my license. I could lose this. I could lose that. I'd say, what about that wife? What about them kids? All right, I'll sign for 2 more weeks, okay? And you know, when you're a drunk of my nature, when you're off sick collecting compensation, what do you do in the blackout? You go to work. You're not supposed to go to work, but I went to work, okay? I get down here to the gate and all the guards are waving at me and I'm waving at them. I'm thinking, man, they really love me down in this place, okay? I get up near the gate. He says, you better get the hell out of here. You're off sick. I said, oh, you're right. Then you get up to Jim's Inn where I left, and then you call on and report on. Then you don't go, okay? I come home one time after 2 weeks. I went to work for 2 weeks straight. At least my wife thought I went to work for 2 weeks straight. I used to come in the door at 11 o'clock. And she says, how do you get drunk at work? How do you get wiped out of work? I said, oh, they don't care what you do down there. But at the end of 2 weeks, I got a $20 paycheck. Did you ever try to explain a $20 paycheck? I said, you won't believe this, the computer blew up, okay? Yeah. And the saddest part of this is, these are my good years, okay? These are when things are really good. This is when things are still on a roll, okay? So one day I was staggering out of this state store in Bloomfield. Up in Pennsylvania, we have state stores that sells the whiskey. And I seen a sign, state store clerk wanted. I thought, man, this is the place to be. You can go to work and get drunk. That's what I've seen. That ain't what it said, but that's what I... So I took this dumb test for this dumb state store. And I forgot about it. You know how drunks forget about things. You just don't remember them. And I said, I come from work one day. I fell in the door from the bar one day. My wife dropped a penny postcard on my chest, and it said, if you want the job, be here Monday. If you don't show up Monday, you don't have the job. It was that simple. There was no interview. There was no physical. There was no nothing. So when you get good news like that, you call up the mill and tell them what they can do with their mill after what they put you through the last 5 years, okay? Don't ever call me. Don't ever bother me. Once you can shove that place, you know. And she's saying, well, you might want to come down and sign a quit slip, Joe. You might want to come back someday. I said, look, I will be on welfare. I will do anything before I come back there after the way you treated me, okay? She says, you got tools down here. Now, did you ever see a drunk's tools? I had tape measures. You know, what are they, 8 foot, 12 foot long? Mine was missing 3 feet. You know, you get stuck in a machine. Folding rule, you were missing a foot and a half. You know what I mean? All the things were twisted, you know. And she said, you got some clothes down there. Do you ever see a drunk's clothes? I had work shoes. I worked in a steel mill on hot steel with time cards for soles, okay? Taped them on for soles. I said, give them to somebody. I'll never be back there again. And that night I went down to my favorite haunt, Jim's Inn. And I was sitting there. I don't know how old I was at the time. But I thought I had a massive heart attack. Both of my arms went totally numb. My chest felt like 10 guys were beating me at the same time. And thank God I had a doctor in the place. He was sitting right beside me. I didn't know it, okay? I told him, I'm having a massive heart attack. My arms are numb. I'm going to fall out. He said, don't worry about it, kid. I had the same thing. And I had to ask him, what did you have? You know what I mean? He said, it's your teeth. I don't know how he knew it was my teeth, but he knew it was my teeth, okay? So I must have got scared or something because I went home and told my wife about this, okay? Next thing I remember the story, she's waking me up, let's go. I said, where are we going? Drunks never know where you're going. You don't even know where you're at, but you're going somewhere, okay? We're going to dentist. For what? Get your teeth fixed. Nothing wrong with teeth. I'm okay now. I'm feeling pretty good. It's the next day, okay? Off we go to the dentist. I'm laughing. You always laugh in the back of your head. If this dentist touches these teeth, I'm going to sue him. He better never touch these teeth. There's nothing wrong with these teeth. Blah, 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 blah. We get out there, have a seat. He looks at him. He says, oh, he says, you must have drank out of a bad glass. You got pyorrhea throughout your system, sending that poison down there. He said, go get a physical tonight. We'll pull those teeth. Tomorrow you'll be fine. Well, I don't know about you. I ain't got no time to get no physical. I got to get to Jim's Inn and get drunk, okay? I got drunk. Here's my wife again. Let's go. Let's go. Now where are we going, woman? Back to the dentist. For what? To get your teeth pulled. I don't need them pulled. I'm doing pretty good. We're going. And all the way out, I'm laughing again. He ain't going to pull his teeth. He didn't get a physical. He won't pull his teeth. So we get in the doctor's office. He says to me, where's your physical? I said, you won't believe this. The doctor was out of town last night, and I can't get a physical till Friday, blah, blah, blah. He said, well, you look pretty healthy to me. Are you feeling any pain? No, I just come out of Jim's Inn, so I ain't feeling no pain, okay? So he took my blood pressure, gave me a little shot, and pulled 28 teeth. Now, I don't know if they're good, bad, or whatever, but they're gone. Now the fear sets in. Where do you get false teeth? Where do you get $200 for teeth? Okay. I can't get a deuce to drink. You got to get $250 for false teeth. Jim's in, and my father had all the answers, okay? My father was a Teamster, and a Teamster had one of the first dental plans in the United States. And I said real loud, and Jim's in, if I had your insurance, chief, I'd get some teeth. Somebody hollered from the back of the room, my nephew just graduated from dental school. Get him to sign the papers. We'll make the teeth, okay? There you go. You get teeth, okay? That's how you do it. I went to the state store, and I was in the state store maybe 2 months, and I'm running my mouth. When am I going to be the manager? When am I going to be the boss? When am I going to be this? When am I going to be that? Everybody takes 2 years. Now, other people take 2 years. Does he know who he's dealing with? This is Joe Newport, okay? So very shortly after that, we were sitting around our kitchen table on a Sunday evening. My wife, her cousin, her husband, and I were drinking a plant canasta. Now, I need to tell you this. Jimmy and I were drinking. My wife and his wife were not drinking. They were just watching us play canasta. And during this fine canasta game, he said to me, do you like that state store job? I said, well, ain't that bad. I said, you know, you get a lot of holidays, you get a lot of vacation. I liked all that. He said in his next breath, how would you like to be a banker? And I said to him, well, what would I have to do at this bank, okay? And he threw out the magic word, nothing. Now, I've been looking for a job all my life where you get paid to do nothing, okay? But I'm not stupid. I said, no, you have to do something. He said, oh, yeah, you have to come to work every day. They give you a great big desk, telephone, and a stack of cards. You call these people up, your bill's a little behind. When do you think you might be making that payment? Well, my wheels clicked. I know all about that. They've been calling me for years, okay? They call you on a daily basis, okay? But when you're a big shot, you do not talk to them, okay? You give it to your wife. It's yours. And then you sit in the background, I'll be in on the 15th to pay that payment. If they don't like it, I'll be out there. Now, you won't talk to the guy on the phone, but you're going to go out and see him. So he got me this job interview. He gave me a guy's name, and I went on a job interview. Halfway through the interview, the guy said to me, how'd you hear about this job? And I said, oh, Mr. Rogers sent me, okay? He said, we have 15 Mr. Rogers. I said, what? He said, yeah, what's his name? I said, I don't know his first name. He said, well, you know what he does here? I said, I don't have the foggiest idea what this guy does here. He said, do you know anything about him? The only thing that clicked in was Jimmy worked at this Brookline office. And I said, you know, I think he might work up the Brookline office. Well, when I said that, the guy went, oh, that Mr. Rogers. And I was hired like that, okay? Not because of who I was. I was later to find out that this Mr. Rogers was second command of this entire bank, okay? Now, I don't know if I got smarter, but somehow, the day I started with the bank, I took 3 weeks vacation from the state store in case I don't like this dumb bank job, I'd go back to the state store. Now, that was good thinking for me, okay? And the miracle of all miracles, the day I started at the bank was sometime in the middle of July of 1968, and I only found that out after I got sober. I stopped drinking. Don't ask me why I stopped drinking, how I stopped drinking, I just stopped drinking. And I was with the bank exactly 2 weeks, and we used to have free lunches upstairs. I was going to go up and eat a free lunch, and the manager of the bank said, the guy that hired you wants to see you right now. I said, well, as soon as they eat my lunch, I'll go see him. He says, no. He wants to see you immediately. And I knew what he did. He checked my credit, okay? The wheels started again, okay? I'll tell him what he can do with this job. I don't have to take his stuff. I'm going back to the state store. He can have his job. Blah, 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 get crazy, man. Got down there, and banks were very formal back in the late 60s, early 70s. Mr. Newport, have a seat. Mr. Salvi will be with you. Now, Salvi's Italian, okay? And in my drinking days, I watched a TV program I should not allow to be watched, okay, called The Untouchables. And I did not like the good guys. I hated Elliot Ness and all them. Al Capone, Frank Nitti, Joe Newport, I figured we could run the mob back in the 20s, okay, making booze and shooting people and all that crazy stuff. And when this guy's name was Salvi, I said, this guy's in the mafia. And when I go in his office, he's going to stab me. Don't ask me where that came from, but it came, okay? I got in there, he said, close the door, and I thought, here it comes, the kiss of death, okay? So I get in there, and he says, you forgot to tell me a few things. And I said, like what? He says, you have a repossession with associates, you ain't paid capital, you ain't paid this, you ain't paid that. He's going on and on and on and on. And all I'm thinking is, he don't even know about Kaufman's, Gimbel's, Horns, the ones I have in other names, and all that other stuff, you know what I mean? Then he said to me, how the hell did a young guy like you get in this mess? And I floored him. I floored me. I says, you won't believe this, but I used to have a drinking problem. Okay. For the next hour, he told me about his father-in-law, the town drunken McKeesport, who was no good. He never was any good. He drinks. He wrecks the car. His house is falling apart. He sleeps outside. His wife sleeps outside. I'm telling him, what a bum. What a slaw. What an animal, okay? Meantime, I thought he was talking about me, okay? And then you know the question's coming. He says to me, well, Joe, how long has it been since you haven't had a drink? And I know 2 weeks was not what this man wanted to hear, okay? You got to give him a deep thought, okay? Deep thinking. Ooh. I said, you ain't going to believe this. Maybe 3 years, 2.5, 3 years, somewhere in that length of time. This guy went ecstatic, okay? Great, great. Now we're talking about how many kids I got, okay? Keep your nose clean for 6 months. We'll pay all those bills. We'll get you a new car. You got a new life here. I got my arm around the guy now. No problem, pal. You can make out that check. And you talk about putting a thief in the candy store? You do not put a thief in the bank, I'll tell you that. They give you an expense account, okay, they let you in petty cash, okay? And the craziness of this whole thing, the worse the drinking got, the crazier I got, the more they promoted me. Now, you figure that one out, okay? And I end up running the collection department. I did stay sober from 1968, from July till December. Our third son was born. We had him christened. The guy that got me the job at the bank was his godfather. And everybody's drinking. I'm walking around sanctimonious. I told you I quit forever, you know. He said, come on, have a drink. I said, no, 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 I quit. Half hour later, he said, come on, have a drink. I said, no, 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 I quit. Half hour later, he said to me, how many guys you know got three sons? I said, not too many. And the really thing to kick that off was I always resented my brother, and I never knew I resented my brother, okay? And he had all girls. And I said, especially my brother, all he got is girls, which is no big deal. But in my head at that time, what? And I picked up a drink. And that is the drink that almost killed me, okay? From that day till the day I got sober, it was hell. And I will try to make it short as I can, bring you up to July of 1972. I was with the bank. I was running this collection department. I had no idea what day it was, what day it wasn't. Okay, I was down to one old beat-up suit, one beat-up sport coat, two shirts, a tie that was always beat up. I was always beat up. My hair was always a mess. I never had my teeth in. I could never find them in the morning, okay? They were always in one place. I was in some other place, okay? And I got to work this day, and I run into the guy that promoted me. And you do not want the guy to see you that promoted you. When your hair's a mess, okay, you got no teeth in, your tie's a wreck, okay? And we sort of try to duck each other in the 10-foot lobby. He went one way, I went the other, back and forth. And he grabbed my hand, and all he did was, he congratulated me. He said, you did what you said you were going to do. And I wished he wouldn't have said that, okay? Because I had no idea what I told him I was going to do, okay? And I'm in this elevator thinking, what'd you tell this guy you was going to do? What did you tell him you was going to do? I had no idea, okay? So I went up to my office, and I took an inventory. Not mine. Everybody around me. All the guys that work with me have got $300 suits on. They look like they just come out of a magazine. The tie's perfect, everything, okay? They all got brand new cars. I had a brand new 69 Plymouth that was wrecked all over, okay? Four U.S. smooth tires, okay? Three batteries, two tire pumps to keep the tires inflated, okay? No inspection, no plate. That's the way I was living, okay? And they all had money because I borrowed off them all. I knew that. And I decided that day I drink just a wee little bit too much. If I cut down, everything's going to be great. But I always do things the dumb way. I quit that day, okay? But what I didn't realize was I needed it to live now. It was no longer a luxury, okay? It was something I had to do. And for the next 3 months, I was a walking bomb. When phones rang, I went to the ceiling, okay? If people walked on this side of the street, I went to the other side of the street. If you sat at my table, I got up and moved to another table. The day before Thanksgiving of 72, we went to a place called the Bo Brummel Club. And I just felt so bad inside and hurt so bad, I just wanted to grab somebody and hurt them so bad that they felt like me. And I said to the waitress, give me some whiskey and get it now. And she must have known. She gave me a water glass. I drank it. Drank another one. I knew for the first time in 3 months I was going to live. Okay. Went home that night. My wife looked at me and says, you're drinking again. I threw some obscenities on her. We start watching 11 o'clock news that night. And they announced a murder 20 miles from my house. Now, whatever gum bands was left up here, one of them snapped and said, they hired a hitman to get you, and he missed. I don't think hitmen miss by 25 miles. I really don't, okay? But this was to put me on a journey you don't want to believe, okay? We went the weekend after that up to the Seven Springs for our anniversary. And on the way up, a car pulled in behind me, and I thought, that's the hitman. If I get him, all our troubles will be over. We're in some little chalet, and I'm in the bathroom hearing these voices like, we'll get him before morning, and we'll be gone. And I'm in there with this hunk of pipe thinking, if you come through the door in the morning, you'll be gone. And I'm sure the wife's thinking, the nut's going to kill me now. He's really out there, okay? We come back. She called the family doctor to give me some green medicine. What it was, I don't know. Don't want to know, okay? I took it and sort of slept through the month of December of 1972, okay? Early on in the month of January of 1973, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I needed a pack of cigarettes. I jumped in the car to get down the hill to get this pack of cigarettes. A car pulled in behind me. I thought, the hitman. If I kill this guy, it's all over. So I jumped out of the car with this great big tire on, and thank God he kept going, okay? So I go up to the house, talk to the wife. She said, come in here. The doctor's on the phone. He wants to talk to you. So I went in to talk to the doctor, and he said, take some green medicine. I said, I ain't taking nothing, pal. You're trying to kill me, too, and you ain't going to do it. Forget that. He said, well, go with your wife. You'll get some help. So I went with my wife, and I got some help. The next thing I know, I'm going down this long tunnel from the general side of the hospital to the psychiatric side. And the end of this big, long hallway was a sign that said morgue. And I said, whoa, this is not the place I want to be. Okay? But anyway, they must have given me a shot or something. I get up to the morgue, and they got me up to my room. And the next day, I was on the seventh floor of the East Wing of St. Francis Hospital. We did not talk alcoholism. They talked schizophrenic, paranoid, with homicidal tendencies, okay? The psychiatrist said he would not be responsible for my wife's life, the kid's life, or anybody's life as long as I was loose on the street. He said he's going to hurt somebody, he's going to hurt him real bad. So while I was in there, I borrowed a dime off this nurse, and I called the FBI of Pittsburgh, okay? They explained about this massive murder plot on my life, and I am forced to go into hiding, and I can't get out and everything else. And he's saying, well, who are you? Where are you? I said, whoa, pal, I'll check you out and I'll get back to you. Now, I don't know how you check the FBI out, but you check them out, okay? Got another dime, called him back, told him I checked you out, you're okay, like I know J. Edgar Hoover or somebody, you know. So he's saying, who are you and where are you? I said, my name's Joe Newport. He said, where are you, Joe? I said, this is the greatest hideout anybody ever thought of. I said, I'm on the seventh floor of the East Wing of St. Francis Hospital. 15 minutes later, I get a phone call, okay? My wife's screaming hysterically, are we going to be murdered? Ain't we going to be murdered or what? And I told her straight out. I said, look, you're out there on your own, and I'm in here on my own, and you got to do it, okay? Now, if you think I was bad going in, I come out now, I got Thorazine, Stelatane, Artane, popping these pills, drinking, carrying on. And somehow in this whole craziness, I self-prescribed an abuse for myself, okay? Now, for God's sake, you don't want to do that, okay? Because after I was out of the loony bin a couple weeks, we had started going to a couple meetings. We went to a meeting, and I met the guy that became my sponsor, Ace, okay? And my wife said, well, ain't that guy Ace worked with you? I said, you know what? If I drank like him, I'd go to AA too, okay? I ain't that bad. You're never that bad, whatever that bad is. So I'm out of this mental ward a couple weeks, and I thought, you know, your life's over. You can't ever drink again. You ain't never going to have fun again. What is the use of living? So I decided to jump off this bridge I grew up underneath, okay? So I didn't tell the wife. I just jumped in the car, started down the hill, and halfway down the hill to go jump off this bridge, a little light bulb went off and says, why don't you stop and have a couple drinks before you go? Because where you're going, they mightn't have any. Now, that don't make sense to anybody else, but it made sense to me. And I stopped, and I used to say I had 3 shots and 3 beers. The truth of it is that morning I had 1 shot and 1 beer, then the light bulb went off. You just took an antabuse about an hour ago, okay? And you laugh for a few minutes. Ha, 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 they lie. Guarantee you one thing, they do not lie, okay? And when you really start dying, that suicide bull crap goes right out the window, okay? I went home, okay? I went home, and it had to be bad to get my wife excited. Nothing got her excited anymore. She screamed, so I must have looked the sight, okay? She called the city police, and they said, look, we got more important cases here. He's just a drunk. If he dies, he dies. If he don't, and that was right, okay? If you get him to the hospital, that's fine. So she took me to the hospital, and she said, kept saying on the way to the hospital, take me to the bridge, take me to the bridge, take me to the bridge. There have been days in sobriety, she said, why the hell did I take you to that bridge? You know what I mean? Nothing. So this goes on to July of 1973. I finally get back to work from November. On a Tuesday morning in the middle of July, she was to be operated on. I took vacation to take her to the hospital. I dropped her off in the hospital. And I left and did what I do. And what I do is drink. That's my thing. That's all I know how to do. And every drink I picked up, I called her at that hospital and said, there's nothing wrong with you. I'm out here dying and all you think about yourself, okay? 5 o'clock that night, I'm totally blown away. I feel water in my face. I look up. She's crying like a baby, okay? She says, can I even go get operated on without you carrying on like this? Then she asked me the question she always asked me, where are the kids? And I had no idea I had kids, okay? I had no idea where they were. But thank God for the sister-in-law I had. She had those kids and she took care of those kids. That night, we got my wife back in the hospital. I had 2 Diane Newports, 2 operations going on. I am carrying the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't ask me what I'm going to do with it, okay? The only feeling I had that night was total hatred of everybody, okay? I wanted to kill her. I wanted to kill the doctors. I wanted to beat them to death, okay? The next morning at 8, 9 o'clock, they start operating on her. And every 5 minutes, I was just at the desk. Is she done yet? Is she done yet? Is she done yet? Is she done? 3 o'clock that night, they let me bring her home. And for 2 days, I was a kind, warm, wonderful husband. Can I get you a glass of water, honey? Can I get you this? Can I get you that? Friday afternoon, she says, give me a glass of water. I said, get it yourself. There's nothing wrong with you. I'm tired of you abusing me. I'm out of here. And you know, drunks are never coming back. I ain't ever coming back, okay? Where I went, how far I went, I have no idea, okay? The next part of the story I remember is the morning of July 15th of 1973. I come downstairs, they were upstairs sleeping. I opened the refrigerator door and there were 5 cans of Iron City beer, and I thought, my God, I died and went to heaven, okay? I reached in my pocket, and the miracle of all miracles, I had a $5 bill, and I thought, man, when she goes to church with those brats, I'm out of here to the Boom Boom Club, drink my booze money up, come back and finish those 5 cans of beer. But you know, the miracle of this program is, by the grace of God, that did not happen. She came downstairs and we start discussing church. She said, you going to go to church? I said, look, hypocrite, you go down there every Sunday, look good and act up. You're going to die and go to hell. I'm going to die and go to hell. It don't make no difference, okay? You know, and right during the middle of this fine discourse, the phone rings and she says, it's for you. And I always scream to call. I said, who is it? She says, Zace. I said, that's all I need, that weirdo from AA bothering me on Sunday morning. And he always talked that 50 stuff. Hey, my man, how you doing? Now, when you got booze and you got money, you're doing great, okay? Great, Ace, great. Oh, I was in the neighborhood. I was going to stop by and see you. I said, Ace, I'd love to have you, but I'm going to church. Now, that was a mistake calling that out, okay? Because here come the wife with that old beat-up sport coat I told you about going to church. Now, I was born Catholic, raised half Catholic, whatever you want to call that. But you can't go to church when you've lied in confessionals, when you've been stealing out of the basket on a regular basis. Church is not where you go on Sunday. So I said, come on up. And he came up and he asked me, he said, why'd you do it this time? And for the first time in my life, whether it's a moment of honesty, a moment of truth, I thought, what else do I do? It's what I do. It's my life, okay? And he said, what are you going to do now? I said, tomorrow, not today. I'm going to get detoxed. I'm going to go to the Gateway, that funny farm. I'm going to go to AA. I'm going to get sober. He's talking about good, good, good. I'll take you. You know, I said, slow down, slow down. He said, you got any booze? I said, I got 5 cans of beer. He said, give them to your neighbor. Now, that's kind of dumb. If I give that neighbor, what am I going to do 5 o'clock at night? Beat on the door and say, give my 5 beers back, okay? Then he said, are you holding anything? I said, I got $5. He said, give it to your wife. Now, that's a bad move, okay? I can't get a quarter out of her for a drink, okay? We have to wreck the house to get a quarter, okay? I can't do that. But to make a long story short, I did end up going to this place called Gateway, okay? Spent 28 days there. They talked about alcoholism was a disease. It was physical, mental, and spiritual, and I knew nothing about that, okay? And what saved my life, a guy was lecturing one Sunday afternoon. He put this great big blackboard out there. He said, for God's sake, whatever you do, don't pray, your prayers might be answered, and you wouldn't know how to accept that. And right away, the wheel started. Who is he to tell me not to pray when I want to pray? Don't you ever tell me not to pray when I want to pray? Man, I'm way out there again. I'm up in my room throwing furniture around, throwing this around, bouncing stuff off the wall. And I laid across this bed for the first time in my life in a long time. I can remember. I cried like a baby, okay? I did not ask God to get me sober. I said, God, don't let me go out there and continue to hurt the people I love, okay? When I drink, I use and abuse the ones closest to me, the ones I shouldn't, okay? I never brought all the garbage out there. I brought it home, and that's sad. That is sad. And what I need to remember behind those 5 cans of beer, there's a story. The night before, I come home totally blown away. I drank one beer. My wife was, like I told you this morning, crazy. She's pouring the other 5 down the sink, okay? I'm choking her to death over these 5 cans of beer, okay? She went out and bought the last 6-pack, okay, and I drank one beer out of that. And only by the grace of God that I did not kill a human being over 5 lousy cans of beer. And that's the way it happened. I left this gateway and I cried like a baby, and the voices are going on. Hey, don't work for you. Hey, I'll never work for you. It's never worked for you. Hey, don't work for you. And the other voice is saying, on Butler Street, it's all over tomorrow. It's all over. And I come back to AA because there was no place to go. No place to go. And I was always grateful I did. Ace and I went everywhere. Went 7 days a week, twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday. Okay. And I had the old timers in AA, and they kept it simple. Okay. They kept it very simple in the beginning. When you get up in the morning, you get on your knees and you ask Almighty God to keep you sober. And if you make it through that day, no matter what happens during that day, and you're sober at night, you get on your knees and you thank Almighty God for another day of sobriety. I quit the bank job, to make a long story short. I ended up going back in that mill for 7 years. And things got good for 7 years. I did the steps. I worked these principles in all my life to the best of my affairs. And something happened after 7.5 years, 8 years. And I hit my bottom in sobriety, not out there. I got involved in something I shouldn't have got involved in. I start hurting people sober, only because self-riot was run again, okay? 7.5, 8 years sober, I was losing everything. My home, my family. The only thing to save me, I kept going to meetings, okay? And when it got so bad, I couldn't stand the pain anymore. I went home and I picked up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in there, in my book is the second edition, okay? And the story in there that saved my life and turned my life around and still keeps my life on a straight and narrow was called The Professor and the Paradox, okay? And I read that story, and he said there were 4 things he had to do to get well. Number one, you got to lose. You got to give up. You got to surrender, okay? You lose to win. 2, to keep it all, you must give it away, give it away, give it away, expecting nothing in return. 3, you must hurt to get well. There is pain involved. And 4, the old way of life must die for a new way of life to begin. You cannot keep doing the things you used to do and expect to stay sober. It just will not happen. It just will not happen. And you know, from that day on, my life has changed, okay? And I know why. What this program talks about is find God, clean house, and help other human beings. And if your house ain't clean, you can't help somebody clean their own, okay? And I think I was telling Ralph before, you know, my wife is a good cleaner, and they do all that stuff. But no matter how clean we make that house, the next day the dust starts coming in, okay? And if I don't keep cleaning it on a daily basis, I'm not going to make it. I know that. You know, and the greatest gift I believe that AA has ever given us is one day at a time, just for today. What have I done today? It doesn't matter what I've done the last 28 years. What am I doing today? Did I try to help somebody else today? Did I try to give it away today? Did I try to share something today? That I get on my knees and ask God today to keep me sober, okay? And will I thank Him tonight? I hope so. Because I believe that's the basis of this whole program. God couldn't would as He was sought, okay? I must seek God. And you know, a few years back, of all people, me, I start reading the Bible. I'm not telling you to read the Bible, but I read it. And every day I read a page or two because I have a little booklet that takes me through the Bible in a year. And I try not to miss that at the daytime, one day. That's the greatest thing, you know. I was talking to Ralph last night or this morning. I don't know what time it was. We talked about what the big book talks about. It don't say alcoholism is the problem. It says lack of power. That's my dilemma. The entire purpose of this program is to find that power greater than ourselves, which will solve the problem for me. And he's done that, okay? He has done that. You know, I still sometimes pinch myself to find out that I'm still sober. It's just such a gift, such a blessing, you know. I woke up this morning, went outside. It's just so nice to wake up clear-headed, knowing what you did the night before, what you said the night before. I didn't have to duck anybody, okay? I didn't have to hide behind a tree and think of somebody watching me, okay? I'm free, you know? Ain't that what it tells us? Joy is happy and free. And that's what we are. And you know, what I've come to learn for myself, and this is what I believe happens, when we first come through that door, the love of one drunk for another drunk gets us in the door, and it keeps us in the door. They love us no matter what I did, no matter what I didn't do. They didn't care. If you want to be sober, I'll do anything I can to help you. And from that love, somehow I came to believe that this program would work for me. For a guy that never worked nothing is right if I'm willing to do what I need to do. And I think from that faith, we get the greatest gift. The hope is if I keep doing what I've been doing one day at a time, I don't have to pick up that next drink, okay? But I can't do that by myself. I need you people. You know, we talk about the big book and we talk about the 12 and 10 and we talk about the traditions, okay? But the greatest gift I've received is you people. The people in my life are so great, it's unbelievable. I would not want to miss one person I've met on these travels in AA, okay? They all somehow become part of our life, okay? Billy and I were down there laughing today, okay? Here's two strange people that met yesterday and just thought we'd known each other for 100 years, okay? Just having a good time, just laughing, just agitating each other, you know what I mean? As we call it, stirring. Digging a little dirt. And it's great. It's great. And you know, the nicest part of it is, I want to be here. I belong here. And I'm glad I'm here. And I'm glad I stayed, okay? And I'm glad my wife stayed with me, you know? And I know today, if A and Al-Anon would not be in both of our lives, we would not still be together. I know that. I know that. And I don't often say that enough, you know. I'm grateful for Al-Anon. I'm not grateful she has more time than me, but I'm grateful for Al-Anon. And you know, if you're new here, stay here, okay? Do what you can do. Ask for help, okay? Talk to people. Get a sponsor. Get a home group. I've always had those, okay? And I would not miss it without it. You know, I'm getting long-winded. I'm getting hoarse. Sorry I can't go 2 hours, Billy. You know? But I always got things in my pocket. It always seems I get them the last time I led or the last this, okay? And this is probably what we should all try to do. Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lies all, the realities and verities of existence, the bliss of growth, the splendor of action, the glory of power. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today well lived makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. I love you all. God bless. Thank you.